Hello and welcome to Mohawks Meet the Team series, a podcast dedicated to the team behind creating the strategy title, Old World. We'll get to know more about the team and their work on the project. This week, we speak to Amanda Kirk, the associate producer at Mohawk Games, and we learn about her Canadian upbringing and much more, so stay tuned. Hey Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks.
So as you may know, with this Mohawk Games podcast, we are trying to kind of dive into people's story, right? And get to know them a little bit better. So I usually start the episodes off by asking a little bit about how you grew up. So where did you grow up, Amanda?
Well, I grew up in Montreal, Canada, in a little cul-de-sac in the West Island of Montreal. And when I hear about my childhood, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know anything about Montreal other than it's obviously a Francophone city, right? And I imagine that it was kind of difficult. Did you grow up learning both French and English?
So I grew up in an English household, and the area that I grew up in was mainly English. But if you went into the city, it was mostly Francophone. So the way that the school works there is you learn English until about fourth grade, and then you're put into French immersion, which is entirely in French. And then you can choose as you continue what language you're going to get into. So I went to an English school. So in fourth grade, you would switch to being in French immersion, which would be 100% French. And unfortunately, I ended up switching schools right then. So it was exciting trying to make friends when everyone was a little bit rusty on their French, because you're just kind of learning it for the first time. But it works really well because you're able to have a better understanding of the language, and you learn it a lot better through immersion.
And help me, because I believe that like Canadian French is a little bit different than like true French, right?
I mean, it's not really the case. There's obviously like slang and like different accents and pronunciation and dialects. It's certainly a little bit more similar to Parisian French than say like Creole French is, but they're all effectively the same language.
Very cool. So how long did you live in Montreal?
So I lived there for 12 years, and then we moved to the United States.
Awesome. So what brought you stateside then?
My father worked for a company, and they had purchased some other company, and he was tagged as being the one who could like go in and get everything set up for the company.
I got you. So what was that transition like? I understand. I mean, like, of course, Canada speaks English, and you know, I think that they're probably our closest neighbors, like as far as like culturally goes. But like, what is the transition like going from Montreal to the United States?
So, I mean, at my age, it was really kind of challenging because I was 12 and I already had like a lot of friends, and we had a lot of like hobbies. We all played video games, we all watched anime together, and that sort of thing. And so, transitioning to the United States, there definitely was a bit of a culture shock just from like things that were normal foods for us. I also went from like living in like a metropolitan area. So even though I lived in the suburbs, you know, we would still be able to go to Chinatown and get, you know, actual real Chinese food and be able to like learn about other cultures because they really cared a lot about that. And then when I moved to like a really rural area. So there wasn't the access there, and the people were, so like, because I was from like a more metropolitan area, there was a lot more diversity just of people. So my friends and I, we had these like niche hobbies, and then I moved to an area where it was very like American. So like everyone watched Saved by the Bell, and you know, everyone was a lot more interested in athletics than when I grew up, when we were like, you know, just dorking around. So what was interesting, I guess, for me is that a lot of the things that you would think were like a transition point. So people thought it was weird that I played video games, but I thought that was because I was Canadian, not because I was a woman. Right. So it kind of helped me in a way. And a lot of the things that I had to learn, like I had to learn the Pledge of Allegiance, and there's only 10 provinces in Canada. So like learning your provinces and the capitals of the province is like pretty easy. And then coming to the US, and I had skipped that grade. So I had like no context for that. American history is also pretty verbose Canadian history is pretty chill. Like after we settle, we just kind of hung around. So, I mean, aside from the War of 1812, of course.
Right. So, yeah. Well, I mean, to say that transitioning at 12 is, I mean, like at 12 years old, I feel like everything's a big deal, right? So like no matter what you do at 12 years old, I mean, but moving from one country to another, I feel like, you know, it'd be a lot for somebody your age. And I am curious to know, because you've mentioned it now, like what is the difference between the way that Americans teach North American history and the way Canadians do?
It's hard for me to know for sure because of the way that we break up, like the way that we break up that educational content, right? Because generally, and it was appropriate, right? So in fourth grade, I learned about Montreal. Fifth grade, I learned about Quebec. Sixth grade, I learned about Canada as a nation. So I don't know what I would have learned in high school. I would have gone to high school after sixth grade because they don't have middle school. So I don't know what context I would have. I imagine we'd be learning more detailed information about Canadian history in general. My sister is a year younger than me. And so she got to go and learn sixth grade U.S. history. So that was more about the states. So I think it's about the same, right? So when I was in seventh grade, we were learning like about Congress and that sort of thing. I don't know if we even covered the Revolutionary War when we were in seventh grade. I think that was previous to that. But then once you get into high school, you start with, you know, U.S. I took AP U.S. history. So it kind of starts at the beginning again and you go into more detail. It's just there's a lot more like dates and things that they did in that time period, where in Canada, effectively, once Britain comes in and takes over everything, it kind of stays very stable.
I got you. So the transition for you was, I mean, as you were mentioning before, like as you moved stateside, a lot of the things that maybe made you different, you kind of attributed to being Canadian instead of like, you know, a girl playing video games. You know, back in the day, that was, you know, strange. And now, of course, it seems so weird that we even think that's an issue. And I imagine that love for video games continued, right?
Yeah, I mean, I started playing, I can't remember not playing video games, I guess. My dad was really big into console games. So we had a ColecoVision growing up and we got a Nintendo when I was 4. So I don't really remember what it's like to not have a console in the house. So I did grow up mainly playing console games, and I would go to like my girlfriend's house and she had a Genesis and I had a Super Nintendo. So pretty much through my entire life, I've been playing games. So it seemed, and it also, it was, I mean, even at a young age, it was something that I was in love with. And I think like in 95, they had the first E3. And so we were reading EGM, which is a magazine. We had magazines back then. And so they would have interviews with game developers and they were advertising E3. And at that point, I had kind of realized that it was a career that you could have. There wasn't, like, if you wanted to get into games, even like reading all these interviews, it was very, very hard to do. And you couldn't just go in and be a game designer. You would have to, you know, either be an artist or a programmer and work really hard and be really successful. And then maybe you could be the next, you know, whoever. I was really big into Final Fantasy. So I really, like in seventh grade, I wrote a book report on Hinorobu Sakaguchi, who's the creator of Final Fantasy. So it's not, I'm definitely an anomaly where this is where I planned to be and I actually got here.
That's so cool. So did you know what you wanted to do when it came to video games? Did you know that you wanted to get into a certain aspect of it?
I mean, I think we all want to be designers when we're little. So that's definitely something that I was looking at. But knowing that you couldn't just be a designer, I decided that, like, through high school, I took a bunch of different courses so that I could try to figure out where I fit. And so I took programming courses. I took a CAD course because technically it's 3D modeling. And I took some art courses, but we didn't have computers in the art room at that point. We got Photoshop like the year I was leaving. I chose to study computer science when I got to college because I knew that if I couldn't get a job as a programmer at a game company, then at least I could get a job somewhere doing some type of programming, which is what ended up happening. I ended up getting a job after school working at a local tech company.
So then eventually you make your way into the gaming industry. How'd you do that?
Yeah, so I was working at this tech company, and I could tell, like, I was doing it was an entry-level job. I was doing data entry, and I was working with SQL databases. I could tell that it wasn't somewhere that I was going to be able to grow quickly. I was the only woman that I worked with, so that was a bit... So you could tell, like, definitely I didn't have the... It was... like more of a masculine culture. So I didn't really quite feel like I fit in. So I was happy there. It paid well. My husband had finally found a full-time job in the area. So that was really great. So we were doing fairly well, and we started doing rock climbing with our friends, and they all worked at a local game studio. And so that went on for like 4 or 5 months. We're all, you know, having a good time. And we come back in October. It was sometime in October, and we were out for a long weekend. We come back, and our house is all boarded up, so we didn't have a place to stay. And my friend knew someone who had like a large house, and I'm like, "Hey, can I stay with your friend? Like, we don't know him very well. Like, would it be okay?" And ask. I don't want to ask him because I don't want to put him on the spot. So it's like, "Oh yeah, totally." So we stay with this guy for a month. And at that point, he was like a senior programmer and brilliant, like totally brilliant. My other friends, totally, totally brilliant engineer. So I didn't really feel like I could stand up. Like, I didn't feel like I was good enough for that. But I think, it's a lot of the time it's your own, like you limit yourself kind of. So by the end of the month, they had convinced me that I should apply. So I applied to their company that they were at, and went through like a day-long interview process. And at the end, they offered me a job. And I didn't know, I guess, I was very young and naive. So I didn't know when I started if I was starting as an engineer or starting as a designer. I think they kind of figured they would figure out where I would fit into. But they really did hire me as a... I think from the interview, they decided I would be a designer and doing some technical aspects. But so it was kind of odd. I go through all this trouble and I end up getting hired as a designer right out of school, effectively.
What was the name of the company?
The company I worked for is called First Playable. It's a small game studio that's mainly focused on children and educational games. By the end of my time there, we had gone from being primarily an entertainment children's game studio to being a lot more focused on education and on like serious games, because those have become a lot more more important in the field now. So most of the work that I did when I started was for Nintendo DS, which was huge at the time. So we did like third party games for like Ubisoft and Disney and that sort of thing.
So then what was your first assignment as a designer? What were you working on when you first got there?
Yeah, so I was working on this game called Style Lab Jewelry Design. So it was for Ubisoft. They had a line of games called the Imagine series. So we actually worked on Imagine Gymnast as well, but that was after. So Style Lab was supposed to be skewed a little bit older for older kids, and it used the DSI technology. So you could take a picture of yourself. So in this game, you were designing jewelry. So you would design jewelry for yourself and you could put it on. And then there were also like NPCs in the game that would request specific things. And so you'd have to go into your little bead studio and make designs for them. It was a really small studio and I was the only designer on the team. So I did like whatever I had to get done. So I did the development for all the little micro interactions that the player would do to like make the jewelry. I did all the dialogue for the characters that were requesting whatever like bead object. So we'd try to, because at the target age range, it's a lot about imaginative play. So the players wanted to have like a little bit of a narrative, like, why am I making this jewelry? So it was like a prompt effectively. So they would come in, they'd be like, I'm making a bracelet for my aunt and she likes blue and butterflies. So we developed a scoring system so that if it had blue and butterflies, it would pass. So you would play through this whole thing. You'd unlock more beads. All the beads were actually based on real life beads, because at that point, I don't understand, but this was a crazy idea that someone had. So you could connect to the Ubisoft website, upload the bead design that you made, and then it would come in the mail to you, and it would come as like a finished piece of jewelry.
That sounds like something my daughter would love. Like, I mean, so much so that, of course, she would love to design her own stuff, but to actually have it sent to her. I mean, I know that's really niche, but like, I feel like that's something perfect for like a certain age range. And in my case, my 6-year-old daughter.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely, I mean, the fan base for the games that I worked on early on was fairly like small because it was all like girls' brands and stuff. But I would occasionally get to go and present at, there would be like a STEM day for middle schoolers or whatever. And I'd tell them about what I did. And some of them would have played my games and they'd be like, oh my goodness, I loved that game when I was 5. That's awesome. It's like, okay, I guess I win.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, to be recognized for that, that's awesome. So what did you end up doing after that?
So we worked on DS for a while, and eventually, obviously, that dried up. We tried getting to 3DS, and that didn't go so well. The transition wasn't as smooth. You know, we worked for Leapfrog for a bit, which is like an educational company, and they got bought by VTech, so that kind of dried up there. So eventually, you know, we tried pivoting in a bunch of different ways, and as I continued with the company, I leveled up. I became like a producer designer. So I would manage small teams doing different things. Eventually we tried getting into VR. That didn't work. We tried getting into serious games, which is really cool. And we did a lot of really good projects, but the time frame on that, when we're used to doing like projects with like a, you know, 6 month to 1 year turnaround, and you're switching to doing projects that have a really long lead time, you know, we couldn't really support the number of developers. So I ended up getting laid off. Then I ended up working at a local university, managing a grant to help improve game development in our area. So I did that for 2 years, and it was really lovely getting to work with students and kind of learning. Like, I had spent a lot of time growing on my own and learning skills and, you know, just doing, just shipping games. That, you know, I didn't really take a step back to realize like how much I'd really accomplished and learned in the 8 years that I was there. So being able to work with students was great because you can see how rough you are before you've spent 4 years learning about game development. I also, part of the grant, so the exciting part of the grant is that it was given to us from New York State to improve the region's ecosystem, because New York is like 4 or 5 in game development in terms of like number of developers. Often when people would leave, like they would leave the company or, you know, anyone in the area. I was involved with IGDA a lot. And if someone lost their job or wanted to, you know, get promoted and leave, like find a new job, they'd have to move to like LA or Austin. So the purpose of the grant was to try to develop systems that would help keep people in the area, which I was really excited about because I would have like cool board game friends and they would all go leave me for Austin. So being able to work with the students and being able to work with the local ecosystem to try to preserve that was really, really meaningful for me. But the one thing I really missed about game development was like being on a team and like being together and working on like one big project all together in that whole process. And so every summer we would run a program called Level Up State, which is for students and local indies to teach them the business skills they need so that they can like go make studios happen, so they can stay in the area, is the whole theory. But every time I would work on that, I would feel like really, you know, joyous that I was helping these teams, but also really sad because I wasn't making games anymore. So that's how I ended up starting to find work. And that's how I ended up here at Mohawk.
So can you tell me a little bit about how that transition went, going from working at that university to Mohawk Games?
Yeah, well, I mean, trying to think of time frame here. So like in early 2020, this year, same time last year, the university has a lot of Chinese students. So by the end of January, I was already starting to be worried about COVID. And GDC is normally in March, and we normally send like 20 some odd students to go to GDC. And it became very stressful for me because I'm the one who books the flights for the students. And I was getting concerned that we were going to send these students out and I'm going to be partially responsible for them going out, and they're going to end up like locked in some hotel because we're going to quarantine or whatever. And then as that continued to roll out, it became more obvious that things were going to be shutting down. By spring break, we had moved to being online only. And for me, it was really important to keep doing our programming. But pretty much after the summer program of 2020, I kind of knew that there would be a lull. So I started like applying for jobs, and Layla and I are in the same mom Discord. So it's like a community for mothers that are in game development. So she had said that they were looking for people. So I asked my husband, got the game. So I made sure it was fun because I'm doing production and QA. So if a lot of my time is going to be QAing and playing this game, I better make sure it's fun, right? Like I knew who Soren was, but just because I know he's a great designer doesn't mean that I can know in my heart of hearts that somehow along this line, the game is still fun. Like, you know, you can't always print hits. So I played the game. I talked to my husband because obviously I still had a decent job. Like, this is kind of a risk. Like, what if it doesn't work out? So I applied, and actually Layla told me no.
So, oh my God, I need to know more about that.
And well, it's because I applied for a QA position, and I've only done like production and design before. And obviously the type of design that I did way back when isn't the same as what we're doing here at Mohawk, right? So I definitely wasn't like a QA person, like right off the bat sort of thing. So probably about like a couple days later, she called me back. She's like, okay, well, not that one, but what about this? We're going to have you do production and QA. And I'm like, oh yeah, yes.
Right. I'll take that.
So yeah. So it's crazy because, you know, I thought the transition would be really like, I thought it would be very different having worked at a small studio focused mainly on products for other companies, to working for a studio that's very, very much design led and very much like they're going to make what's amazing and awesome. And, you know, working with people who have like tons of experience, but it turns out that they're both fairly small, agile companies. So the transition was actually really, really wonderful. And being able to work with everyone here is like amazing. They're all so talented and like really warm and friendly that it's just so lovely, lovely to be here.
Yeah, Mohawk Games has kind of become the who's who of strategy game developers. So it's pretty cool that you're like surrounded by all that talent. I'm curious though, are you still in New York then?
Yeah, I'm in upstate New York.
Wow. Okay. All right. So how does that, I mean, how has that worked for you? I mean, I understand most of the industry now is working remotely, but how does that affect your day and how do you feel like the remote working is working for you?
I think it's been a huge benefit for me because I've been looking locally, and at the time when I was looking, there wasn't a lot of opportunities for like production roles in our area. So the fact that there are more remote options has been really wonderful because obviously I'm not I'm not a teenager, I'm not a 20-year-old anymore. So the idea that I would have to pick up my whole life and move for another company that like, you know, it's a really volatile market. So like the idea of being able to pick up and move and not know how long I had a job for was really scary for me. I also, when I was looking for work, I'd have to like go and figure out if the culture was good. Fortunately, I already knew the culture was good here. So, but the change to remote, it's like I was hired as a remote worker, right? So I don't really, like, I don't have like a rule book for what it was like before to what it is like now. So it's fairly natural for me. When I was working at the university, a lot of times, like even though I had an office on site, I wouldn't talk to people for like weeks at a time. Like it would all be email, you know, occasionally I would have meetings that were outside of my office, but effectively I might as well have been remote. So it's something that I like slowly transitioned into when we switched to full remote. It was great because I could work in my house instead of having to drive. Like I live about a half hour from the university, which is, I mean, it's a normal commute, but just being able to go downstairs is and plug into my office is good. I'm lucky that I am in upstate New York because the cost of living is really low. So I live on 2.5 acres. We have a like 4-bedroom house. My husband, actually, he's always been remote, ironically. So his company was like an R&D company, and they got purchased by a company in Irvine like 4 months after I started at First Playable. So it's ironic because I could have ended up in Irvine, California, not for games, but because my husband, his HQ is there. But because my job required me to be here, we stayed here. So I think that's what's really great about remote work is it gives people a lot more opportunity, and it gives companies a lot more opportunity to be able to pick like the best people. And I think there's like, certainly there's a lot more work that has to go into making sure that everyone feels like they're part of the team and that people don't like get lost in the weeds or, you know, something gets dropped off because, you know, we don't have that same like water cooler conversation that you would have in the before times. But I think, you know, we know that. So we work really hard to make sure that, you know, all those kind of potential pitfalls are avoided.
Yeah, I think the real benefit of the games industry is how, I guess, flexible it is, right? Because there's a lot of industries that aren't flexible in that regard. So I'm glad to hear that. And I think that was a great point about being able to find the best talent regardless of where they are, right? Because at this point, you can start to, yeah, and you can find somebody in upstate New York who might work for your Maryland studio. So that's awesome. I'm curious, though, with the underlying kind of cause of all that being COVID, how has that affected your personal life at all?
So I have a 3-year-old son. So it's very challenging, I guess. I am so lucky. Like, I can't begin to describe how fortunate I am that I still have a job and that my husband still has a job. But it's certainly hard, regardless, to do it with a toddler. We lost our daycare from March through May of 2020. So we were both working full time, and we would just had a schedule, and we would like put the kid with one parent, put the kid with the other parent. I think it's been good in that sense because my son learned when he was like 2, like what it means that mommy's working or daddy's working. And he's really, it's weird. He's 3 and he's really respectful of that. it's still hard. Obviously my dog can go and bark in the background when the mail comes. We can take, so in the winter, it's definitely getting a bit harder because, you know, in the summer and in the fall, we can go for nice hikes outside. We can play outside a lot. I like gardening. So like I have a lot of things that I can do outside, which is, you know, healthy and good for you. But in the winter, it's cold and there's not much to do out there. We built a snowman yesterday. So this is definitely a challenge. We ended up switching to having a nanny come in. They're my friend. So they come in and watch him while we're both working, which is, I mean, I love it because they wouldn't have a job otherwise. And, you know, I've always really wanted to work. So it's definitely a challenge for everybody. It's just how, you know, like what is your challenge with COVID, but could be worse.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's awesome to hear. To be able to recognize that you're fortunate is good. I'm curious. So, I mean, did you get out before? Did you go and socialize a lot? Or have you always been sort of somebody who sticks to themselves and stays with their family a lot?
So I think I started my life as kind of a introvert, hermit, whatever. I would just, you know, game. And I guess not because I would just play MMOs. So I always was kind of a social person, but I knew how to socialize online. So a lot of that has transitioned to online socialization. I do go to like, there's like some networking events you can go to now that is like online only. I used to, just because of my work, I would get to go like to different, like we would go to MIGs, we'd go to PAX. I used to go to PAX for fun, but then eventually I'd have to go for work, you know, and meet with different people or show. There's a local nonprofit that is trying to like understand the ecosystem, like the game ecosystem. So, you know, we would go and show them around and, you know, explain all the different things that make our industry tick. So I'd get to go to networking events for work, and I got to know a lot of people in the local area. We had like IGDA meetings. I was the chair for our local IGDA for a bit, and we started doing these like community social nights. So we would just pick like a local restaurant in the area, and we would all just like descend on it. And we'd have like 20 people. We'd all be hanging out and like, you know, just talking and getting to know each other and, you know, supporting each other, because I think that's a really big thing that you need in your, you know, in your area. So like all that, like effectively we had one, our last meetup was last February. So that's all gone. And like, I miss having like a night out. I miss going to like GDC and meeting all my, like, you know, people move on or they leave the area. But a lot of times you'd see each other at GDC, or I got to go to E3 twice. And so I have friends who've moved to LA, so I would use that as an excuse to meet up with them. And so that's all kind of, you know, not happening. So I do get to hang out like online with people. Some of my friends, they don't have like a family. Like some of my friends are still young and establishing themselves, so they live on their own. So they've started doing different things like streaming, you know, video games, so we can all like be on a virtual couch with each other, or we play like Among Us so that we can, you know, kind of connect and pretend we're in the same space, even if it's just a digital one.
So you mentioned gardening before, and I'm just curious to know about any other hobbies that you like.
So I'm definitely a dabbler. I have lots of hobbies. I think I picked up a lot of them back, you know, like when I worked a lot of hours, I wouldn't come home and want to work on my own games. I'd come home and want to do things that were not staring at a computer. So we bought this house because I wanted to get sheep at some point. So I think I played too much Harvest Moon as a kid, honestly. So I like gardening, and we had chickens for a bit, which is kind of like they're living creatures, but they're fairly similar to gardening. And I started to learn how to knit, which is actually really good because I started knitting because eventually I want to get sheep. But the other added benefit is we used to do a lot of board games back when we used to hang out with real people. And we would play like Arkham Horror, which has, if you play with a lot of people, it takes a long time to get around to your turn. And some people would end up looking at their cell phones, which is frustrating because then they lose what's going on. Or like we would play like Agricola, the same thing would happen. So I started knitting so I could knit and wait for people to take their turn. And I'm still paying attention to what's going on, but then I'm also making scarves and stuff so I stay warm in the winter. And then, you know, like I've always been a crafty person, so sometimes I paint. I have like paints and stuff, but I rarely have the time to get them out now that I have a kid. We still play games all the time and it's fun because he's three now, so we can start, you know, showing him how to move around in a game, and he likes interacting and telling us what to do, so it's fun.
Yeah, three-year-olds are really good at telling you what to do. So can you tell me a little bit about your roles and responsibilities at Mohawk at this point?
Yeah, so I... Layla's going to yell at me because I'm not very good at talking about myself. So I do production. I also do QA. I'm currently working on some videos that we're hopefully going to be putting out soon. So for production, mainly I'm working with the art team to make sure that all of the assets get in the game. Like we've planned the assets that are going to go in the game. And so we want to make sure that we're actually going to hit those targets. And so we work with an outsourced art team, and they produce a lot of the models and the buildings that are in the game. Not all of them, but a fair amount of them. And so when we get a character model from them, it has to be reviewed, and there's like a whole process. So I help streamline that process. And then I also have to make sure that we send them the information for what is going to be worked on next, and then make sure that syncs up with what our animators are doing so that we don't have animators thinking that they're going to work on models that don't exist yet. And then, of course, that, you know, trickles down to making sure the audio person has things to work on. So making sure that's all smooth. We had a meeting to go over all of the UI needs that have to go into the game before we finish, so that we make sure that we're not forgetting, like, oh, 6 months ago we talked about this idea that we needed to implement, and then oops, we just forget about it because we're busy working on everything else. So making sure that doesn't happen, because what we want. And, you know, the studio really cares a lot about having like no crunch and like everyone is working their very best. And so a lot of that is making sure that we've planned for everything that's going to happen and that people aren't surprised so that they don't get like overworked or, you know, concerned that something that they thought was going to happen doesn't happen. So I do a fair amount of that. I've helped with some of the new hires that we've had. I help with onboarding so that we have an amazing engineering team and they have really good documentation for like how to get the build working. But a lot of like your first week or so here is like figuring out who knows what and how do I ask the question and is it okay to ask the question and, you know, is this, do you actually want my feedback? Is the game done yet? It's like, no, you need to give us all your feedback because the most important feedback is when you haven't ever played the game because you don't come in with it, you know, any history. So you don't know, like what you don't know is actually really important. So I help with that. And then I also do a fair amount of the QA. So we send our builds out twice a week. So those have to be verified. We have to make sure that we didn't introduce any any bugs in the system, nothing that's going to be like totally game breaking. So it's important to have, you know, a lot of people have their eyes on it so that we make sure we can catch anything so it doesn't end up getting to fans and their saves don't work or whatever it is. We also do a community game Friday starting at 11 EST. So I'm part of the group that runs those. So we record all those and, you know, we get a lot of community feedback through those. And it's really great to see, you know, see how the game grows and how quickly everything changes. And I'm sure I do other things, but.
Oh my God, Amanda, my head is spinning. My head is spinning. That was a long list of things. That's amazing though, to see and hear that you have that kind of responsibility. I mean, I don't, how do you even go about trying to keep yourself organized with all that?
I mean, we use Jira. So Jira helps a lot for organizing. And certainly I've spent a lot of time doing this sort of thing, like on a smaller scale. I have a lot of spreadsheets. I've always loved spreadsheets. So it's my jam.
I couldn't do it. I hate spreadsheets. And I feel like just like all the things that you just mentioned, I feel like there's so many working parts. And I feel like I can only imagine how stressful that can be sometimes.
There's some stress, but it's mostly love. I love it.
Well, so I wanted to come back to something you said earlier too and kind of change gears here for a second, because you mentioned a love for role-playing games and you kind of got your way into video games with Final Fantasy. And I wanted to know more about some of the video games you play for fun. Or do you play for fun at all?
How do I? So I play games. It's really hard to make time for it now because I work, obviously, and I have a kid. And I also have this like really bad attraction for games that don't have finite endings, which is why working on this is terrific. So like these days, I'm trying to think what I play now. So like now I play like anything. Like I play lots of different things. I have very eclectic taste because that's just something that over time, it's like I play this game because my friend works on it. It's cool. I play this game because I want something that's really relaxing. I still play Harvest Moon. I've played like pretty much all of them at this point. So I like a lot. I really liked a lot of simulation games growing up. I didn't have a lot of access to PC when I was younger, but I did get to play like Cross Country Canada Trucking when I was in school and King's Quest V. And so now like I'm currently playing, among all of the things I'm currently playing, I'm really excited about Nebuchadnezzar, which is like this, it's kind of like Caesar, like this, the simulation, the city management games. So I've been playing that when I have spare time. I'm also trying to play Ghost of Tsushima, which came out last year, and Hades, which also came out last year. And I'm like, my backlog is, I've gotten to the point where I like just play what makes me happy. Because if I worry about my backlog, I'm just going to be full of tears.
God, that speaks to me on a level you don't understand. I'm into my soul, really. But yeah, no, those are great games too. I've played all three of them and I'm enjoying all three of them. So, I mean, Ghost of Tsushima was one of my favorite games of last year. So that's
awesome. Yeah, it's so good. And I also used to play a lot of Crusader Kings 2. So I mean to play more Crusader Kings 3, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, speaking of games that don't ever quit, I don't know if you should start that one.
No, I've played it. I just haven't played enough of it, so I want to get back to it.
curious to know, because you mentioned Final Fantasy. Which Final Fantasy did you get started with?
So it turns out my first Final Fantasy was actually Final Fantasy 1. We used to rent games when I was a kid. We would go to, like, this is before Blockbuster existed. So I'd go to, like, a video rental place, and I would rent Final Fantasy and Princess Tomato and the Veggie Kingdom. But then I didn't know because I was too young, so I forgot. So I ended up going to college, and then that's where I figured out that I'd played Final Fantasy 1 because I remembered what the characters looked like, but I didn't remember anything else. I definitely started playing. So I had a Super Nintendo, and again, I would, like, get on my bicycle and I would go to the store. So I started with Final Fantasy 4, which is 2 in the US. So that was really, like, my quid is, like, which Final Fantasy is my Final Fantasy? It would be 4 is my actual Final Fantasy. But I did play 1 first. I just didn't remember it.
That's the correct answer. Just so you know. And if there was anybody, I love Final Fantasy 4, 2, whatever. I was just saying in another podcast with another group that the soundtrack for that game was so good that I actually put a tape recorder up to the TV and recorded the soundtrack for, like, hours just so I could listen to it outside of playing. And I love that.
I ended up getting the Final Fantasy VII soundtrack. My dad ended up finding, I don't know how, because this is, like, mid-90s, like, import shops weren't that big. But he ended up getting me as the soundtrack for Final Fantasy VII. It's probably the first video game soundtrack that I, like, owned as a thing. I didn't even have that many CDs back then. I still play Final Fantasy XIV, which is the online one, which, again, I shouldn't be playing MMOs. The thing with that is that I've been playing, the people that I play with are people I've been playing with for, like, 15 years. So it's not even really even as much about the game. It's also the friends you make along the way.
Yeah, the journey, right?
Yeah.
I get it. My dad's obsessed with Final Fantasy XIV. He's always found different MMOs to get into, but he's stuck with that one. And he has a little healer that he, you know, just loves. I actually, for Father's Day last year, I got someone to professionally draw his character. And
oh, nice.
Then, yeah, put it in a frame and gave it to him. So, a quick question for you. Have you ever had the opportunity to come down here and meet the team?
No, I got hired about a year ago, I guess. I'll stick with that because I don't know when this is coming out. But yeah, so I got hired about a year ago. We were in full COVID lockdown. And so I haven't even, like, left. I have been in a 30-mile radius of my house since last year.
That's too bad. Hopefully, now that things have kind of smoothed out a little bit and the vaccination's rolling out, maybe you guys will actually have an opportunity to meet each other in person.
Yeah. Well, eat the good food down there.
Yes, there's so much of it. I'm in the Northern Virginia region too, so I...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a really great place, and there's a lot of different food types, and yeah, there's so many good places to eat.
I was going to say, I've been down there for MAGFest, so I'm aware of, you know, like, the area and stuff. So it's just more, like, sad. I can't go down and hang out with people and eat good food and see the team.
Yeah. So, Amanda, you are incredibly friendly, and I feel like people after listening to this are going to want to find you. So if they wanted to, where would they find you?
Oh, the best way to get me is probably on Twitter, because I love Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Amanda L. Kirk. Very creative Twitter handle. But yeah, I spend a lot of time on Twitter. I have a website, and I don't know.
Is that, like, a website you don't want to mention? I feel like there was, like, I have a website, and then you're like,
well, it's amandaelkirk.com. So it's just very.
No, that's perfect.
It's like, you can check out the links below and there see you go. How to spell all this garbly stuff. Cause
that's awesome. Well, Amanda, it's been great to get to know you. And I hope that you've dug yourself out of all that snow up there. Have you yet?
Yeah, no, it's lovely. It's like with your jacket unzippered and be comfy. It's really nice out today.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Getting ready for maple syrup season.
آمين